The Department of Veterans Affairs proposes the removal of Susan Taylor for her role in fraud allegations from VA's Inspector General. She's the Deputy Chief Procurement Officer at the Veterans Health Administration. You can read more about her case. It's one of our top stories at federalnewsradio.com. She is the second high-profile official to leave government under a cloud in the next week. And last week, Julia Pearson resigned as Director of the Secret Service after a scandal there about securing the safety of President Obama. Martha Johnson is the former Administrator of the General Services Administration. She has advice for current and former employees who are dealing with the fallout of a leadership shakeup at the top of their agencies. Martha, I have to give you credit. You are one of the few people in all the time that I've been in Washington who stuck with what was happening in his or her life as it happened and didn't go off somewhere and hide for a while. So I appreciate your insight into what people like Ms. Taylor and Ms. Pearson and the people surrounding them are dealing with. Thanks for being on the program today. What did you think of, what did you flash back to, if anything, as you learned about these cases that we've been looking at in the past week, Martha?
Well, I, of course, flash back to, it's good to be on the show, Francis.
Thank you.
I flash back to, I go right to my flashbacks, don't I? I flash back to the experience that I had, of course, and it's been a couple of years now. One would think that you could get distance on it, and I certainly have, but I think it's one of those moments that, you know, not a lot of people go through, and I particularly watched the hearings, the Secret Service hearings, and was thinking about what it was like to be in front of that particular committee. So it brought back the experience, and I was looking at the at Ms. Pearson and thinking about what she was doing to keep herself collected and holding it together. And I respect people whose comportment is serious and doing that. It's a tough situation to be in.
Your case was similar, much more to that of Ms. Pearson, because it appears she's kind of in the same situation that you're in, the action or were in, actions of others that took place on your watch, that made, by the way, for a great title of your book, On My Watch, that you can learn more about later at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But she was more in the same kind of situation that you were in, actions and decisions that other people made reflected on the image that people had of the way that you were conducting the business of the agency. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I think that's fair. Ed, in my experience, it was a bit of a I was on top of a very complex organization, a very big one, GSA, and it's important for the organization that it has the management agenda for the government to step up and be as Six Sigma in performance as possible with respect to management, and that was where something fell apart. And there is a responsibility that a leader has to be accountable. And there are various arguments about whether or not that accountability should be to stay and to fix the problem or to go. But I think we have such a political climate that there is not the kind of time and grace in the system to let a person correct the situation.
The business of the agency, the business of the organization carries on after the leader leaves. Yeah. And you have stayed in touch, my understanding is, with some of the folks that you worked with at GSA. You were well-liked and well-respected at that organization. How did they continue to do business and go about the daily operations of the agency in the aftermath of your departure? There was a period of time before Dan Tangerlini came in there that obviously nobody was really sure what was going to happen next, same as we're seeing at the Secret Service, and I'm sure we'll see at other federal agencies as time goes on.
Well, I have to peek in through the same peepholes that everybody else does who are not inside. Actually, Dan Tangerlini came in the very next day. It was a very immediate replacement, and that allowed the agency not to go through an interim period of sort of not knowing what was happening. But I think that my hope was, and I sense it in some of the things that are happening, that the big directions we were setting and the important agendas that we were doing were big and important enough that they didn't just rely on me, and they seem to have carried on. The environmental agenda, for example, the workplace agenda, upgrading and getting the government to be more innovative in its IT solutions. All of that, it's a big machine. One person isn't the only person on spot. So I feel good about the agenda carrying on, and I think that's important. And various individuals have you know, had various experiences following on. Some stayed, some have left. In the normal order of things, the organization, the institution, continues to continue on.
You started to write and talk and tweet and blog about your experience almost immediately. Was that cathartic for you? And is that something that you recommend to others, or is it something that worked for you and may not work the same for everybody?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I actually spent the first 6 months writing, but I was writing fiction. I was writing a completely different. I went someplace else, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was to hone my my writing skills. Part of it was to finish a project I'd had. But part of it was that I think when people hit a wall, and it's a tough career wall or personal wall, it helps to have a creative life because it allows you to generate again. It isn't as if you're stopped in your tracks. You can still make, you can still cook, you can still garden, you can still generate, you can still write. So the novel was an important sort of rebooting for me, getting back into expression, self-expression, and so on. Then I started writing the book that I published on my watch about the experience, and I hope it wasn't therapy. I mean, in the sense of asking my readers to cope with my therapeutic process, but I do think they wanted, I was certainly given enough feedback and encouragement that people wanted to know the story because they felt there were some leadership ideas inside it. And I also really wanted to say loud and clear that my leaving, my demise at GSA had nothing to do with my being innovative. Our being innovative on my watch was not what brought me down, so to speak. It was not the thing. In other words, I wanted to put out a message about resignations like this can send just fear through the bureaucracy, that, you know, very punitive kind of political environment. And instead, I wanted to offer another chapter, another movie here, which is that we were very innovative, and that wasn't what tripped me up. So I had a couple of agendas going on, and in fact, the book shows that. I have about three parts to it. One is about strategic management, some of the things we learned, and then the second is about the congressional hearings and all that process, because people always want the inside story, but it's not really kiss and tell. It's just what it was. And then the third was my own reflections on resilience. How do you move through these kinds of things? And what happens on the other side. So it's a little bit of an encyclopedia that way, although not a long one.
Martha Johnson's book is called On My Watch, Leadership, Innovation, and Personal Resilience, and that's the book about her experience at GSA. And the novel is called In Our Midst. You're working on another one, aren't you?
I am. You know, National Novel Writing Month is November, and I am determined to write a sequel, so that's my goal. Yes, and I'm also working on another management book about resilience, very, very specifically with a fellow writer down in Chapel Hill. It's called The Up in Upheaval. So it's about resilience.
And that is apropos for the times that we're in, not just because of scandals and other turmoils at agencies, but with budget processes that are uneasy at best and causing shutdowns at worst and many other issues. It's an appropriate title or an appropriate topic for right now in government.
Yeah, there's a lot of turmoil. It's not unusual. There's always been turmoil, but I think it's important for us to really open up about the lessons of resilience that are available to us, not for organizations, but for people. We know a lot about how organizations can be resilient. We spend a lot of time on that. But it's how does a leader bounce back, come back? What's that look like? And there's no one guidebook, but there are good ideas to share and be aware of.
Are there a couple keys that you have found are common in people who are resilient and who do bounce back well from adversity?
Well, you know, we've interviewed a lot of people and a lot of leaders, and we focused on leaders, and there are a couple of things. One is that actually one of the important things for leaders, and these are leaders for whom their organizations have gone through some crisis, everything from Katrina to financial collapse, and one of the things they need to do is they actually need to be able to tell good stories. They need to tell a story very, very immediately so that the organization begins to get its bearings back. It needs to know where it is going to go forward and how it's going to do that. And the leader actually has to be fairly skilled at storytelling, not analysis and interpretation and all of that, but really a gripping story so that everyone comes back to the campfire, settles down, and says, that's where we're going. So they're interesting little skills that leaders should cultivate in a general way, and they come to be really important in crises. And then there's another one, and that is in particular that leaders need to find help, but it needs to be very carefully chosen. It can't be just gooey support. It needs to be help where the leader is literally heard and they can express themselves in a safe place, because leaders are so in public. They need a place to do their own recuperation, if you will. And that needs to be a private network. Sometimes friends, but not or family, but sometimes an odd person you don't even know who just can absorb the story of the leader, hear it, and store it away, and the leader has had a chance to express him or herself as well. Things like that. They're on the behavioral side, not on the finance and marketing and production side of things. We have enough literature about that.